What scares a potential enemy more, waves of fighter bombers or massed troops on the ground behind tanks? It's an important question with strategic and budget implications. New research suggests the U.S. may have it all wrong, as we hear from Project on Government Oversight military fellow Dan Grazier, who joins me in studio. Dan, good to have you in.
Hey, it's great to be here.
So you were looking at a RAND study that looked at perhaps these really expensive, high-tech and difficult to maintain and keep operational weapon systems we have now or under development may not have as much deterrent effect as people thought.
Yeah, exactly. The RAND study looked at a number of different deployments over the last 70 years or so to determine what force structure would best deter a potential adversary for carrying out their ends. And they found, after looking through 21 different crisis deployments, that it was U.S. heavy combined arms ground forces that deterred much better than just sending a couple of squadrons of F-15s or even parking the Sixth Fleet off the in the Mediterranean to conduct potential airstrikes.
That was a Richard Nixon gambit, right?
Right, in 1970, the Black September crisis, where the United States was trying to deter Syria from invading Jordan.
And in your own experience in the military, does that seem to ring true to you?
That's definitely relevant here because I was a tank officer in the Marine Corps. So I have I do have a natural preference for armor. But I'm also a military historian. And really my academic work is focused on air power history and not so much the armor ground warfare history. So This study really confirms a lot of the research that I've done over the last couple of years that shows that, look, when we really need to achieve our strategic goals, nothing will substitute a commitment of ground forces.
And does the military really, do you think, in their doctrine, follow that nowadays? Especially there's a new doctrine that says we are now back in great power competition. What's the implication of that when the great powers, they mean Russia and China?
Right.
So far, India is still on our side.
for the time being, hopefully they remain that way. For the time being, what the return to great power competition is producing, it's justification for buying a lot of F-35s and the B-21.
Under development.
Under development in the next couple of years. It justifies the four-class aircraft carriers. Now, to a lesser degree, it does also justify the Army's tank upgrade program. They're moving now into the M1 A2 SEP version 3, which is an interesting program. I have some questions about that one. But the overall message with that is, hey, we need to buy more high technology weapon systems to be able to compete with our peer adversaries.
Well, could part of the thinking behind the military planners, they have so much money to spend and it's growing, but it's not growing that fast. In some ways, lots of troops poses greater future costs than expensive weapon systems because the cost of the volunteer force is really something I'm not sure they could envision how expensive it was when this whole thing was established back in the mid-1970s.
That's true up to a certain extent because there are, yes, veteran care, when you look 20, 30, 40 years down the road, does get very expensive, but it still pales in comparison to the cost of maintaining the F-35 fleet, which is expected to cost $1.5 trillion over its lifespan.
We're speaking with Dan Grazier, military fellow with the Project on Government Oversight. And so reading the RAND report, looking at your analysis as a historian, what do you think budget planners and military planners should take away from this? What should they do differently?
Well, with the idea that ground forces or what it takes to achieve a decision in warfare, we need to structure the force around that. With that being the case, and it is true when you look through history, that is absolutely true, then your decisions about the type of aircraft that you purchase that comes into question. So instead of buying a lot of stealth aircraft that are meant to penetrate deep into defended enemy airspace, we need to buy more dedicated attack aircraft. Oh, we have the A-10 right now. How about we look at the next generation of attack aircraft, so the A-20 or whatever you want to call it, down the road. Now, that kind of aircraft doesn't need to be stealthy because it working in close cooperation with ground forces.
People will know it's there.
They'll know it's there. The ground forces take a lot of precautions to protect the aircraft. Like they're mutual supporting arms when they work like that. So the ground forces are conducting suppression of enemy air defense missions while to protect the aircraft as they're coming in to conduct their missions. So you don't need a very flashy, stealthy aircraft for that. You need a very rugged aircraft that can operate down close with the ground troops, that can land close to the ground troops, so you can have that direct coordination as much as possible. Now, you still need fighter aircraft. I'm not discounting that. But with the idea of ground forces being the most important, then that makes attack aircraft the most important type of aircraft. The fighter aircraft to gain air supremacy, local air supremacy. You don't need it all the way to the final objective. You just need it around the actual advancing ground forces. But they become secondary to protect the attack aircraft. And then the deep strike aircraft for interdiction, you need those mostly as a tertiary distraction to try to spread the enemy out as much as possible so they can't concentrate their air defense assets right up close to the front lines.
And when you look at tanks and troops, do you think that, is there evidence yet at this point in history that unmanned versions of these, which can be much less expensive, you don't need a lot of the perhaps armor and soundproofing and so on that you would need with tanks with people inside that could be operated remotely, not autonomously, but remotely?
Remotely.
Could that mitigate some of the troop costs and copy costs of such a, I guess, return to a traditional type of ground force?
It's possible. I'll be interested to see over the next couple of years as a lot of these systems are developed to see the potentiality, I guess, and about how well they'll work and how effective they'll be on the battlefield. I do always urge caution with that because those kind of systems need to be networked and they're prone to cyber attack. So for right now, the M1 A1 tanks that I operated on in the Marine Corps from 2005 to 2015 would be very difficult to hack remotely. So that becomes an issue when you start talking about those remote systems.
So the bottom line of this RAND study and your analysis then is, how would you summarize it?
Well, it should call into question a lot of the decisions that have been made over the years. And it's really difficult to quantify history, which they tried to do, but it at least has provoked a useful discussion in and around Washington. It kind of shatters some of the conventional wisdom that has existed around defense matters for a century, really.
Dan Grazier is military fellow with the Project on Government Oversight. As always, thanks so much.
Oh, thank you for having me.
We'll post this interview along with a link to more information at federalnewsnetwork.com/Federal Drive. Hear the Federal Drive on demand. Subscribe at Apple Podcasts or Podcast One.